Chitraketu said, Lord Shiva, the spiritual master of the general populace, is the best of all living entities who have accepted material bodies. He enunciates the system of religion. Yet, how wonderful it is that he is embracing his wife, Parvati, in the midst of an assembly of great saintly persons. Text 7. Jatadhara stivirtapa brahmavadi sabhapati ankikritya striyayam chaste gatahri prakrito yatha. Lord Shiva, whose hair is matted on his head, he has certainly undergone austerities and penances. Indeed, he is the president in the assembly of strict followers of Vedic philosophy. Nonetheless, he is seated with his wife on his lap in the midst of saintly persons and is embracing her as if he were shameless, ordinary human being. Purport. Chitraketu appreciated the exalted position of Lord Shiva, and therefore he remarked at how wonderful it was that Lord Shiva was acting like an ordinary human being. He appreciated Lord Shiva's position, but when he saw Lord Shiva sitting in the midst of saintly persons and acting like a shameless, ordinary man, he was astonished. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur remarks that, although Chitraketu criticized Lord Shiva, he did not offend Lord Shiva like Daksha. Daksha considered Lord Shiva insignificant, but Chitraketu expressed his wonder at Lord Shiva's being situated in that way. Om Agyanatramanandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chakshusmatam Yena Tasme Sri Guruve Namaha Vanchakalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyascha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadhara Sivasadi Ghor Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we are reading this chapter where Mother Parvati is cursing Chitraketu, and what brought about the incident for the curse, we have to note here. So in this particular verses of this chapter, this described the exalted position of Lord Shiva. Now generally when we are new to Krishna consciousness and we don't have a proper understanding of Vedic culture, we sometimes minimize the position of demigods, and sometimes we are very critical of demigods, because when we are taught the 10 offenses against the holy names of the Lord, he said one should not consider the demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma to be equal to or greater than that of Lord Vishnu. So that is already instilled in us, that we should not consider that these demigods are greater than Lord Vishnu. At the same time, you should understand that these exalted personalities are not ordinary beings. They are very, very specially elevated Vaishnavas who have been put in that position by the Supreme Lord. At the same time, all these demigods, they are exalted devotees of the Lord. So we generally emphasize on the point that we should not consider the demigods to be equal to or greater than Lord Vishnu. But then the first offense against the holy name of the Lord is saying one should not blaspheme the devotees who have dedicated their lives propagating the message of the Supreme Lord. And in order to take up a position as a demigod, one has to be a very exalted Vaishnava, a pure devotee of the Lord. Not any Tom, Dick and Harry can get that position. So we have to be very mindful to understand this exalted position. But here we see Lord Shiva's position is very, very unique. Although he is categorized as demigod, but his position is far surpassing that of demigods. He is called Mahadev. He is the person who is in charge of all the demigods. He is not just a demigod. Now, if you read further descriptions of Lord Shiva's real identity and real position, you know, in Chaitanya Charitamrita it is explained that Lord Shiva is in the spiritual world addressed as Sadashiva or Mahavishnu. So he's not an ordinary person. He is actually the Supreme Lord himself, but to perform a particular activity, he has transformed himself into that particular personality to carry out the functions. Now, we see when the Supreme Lord has created the universe, He puts different demigods in charge of different activities. And for Lord Shiva to perform His activity, He has to perform within the limitations of that position. He cannot surpass that position. Just like we see in the story of Ramayana, Lord Ramachandra, when he came to this material world to perform the pastimes according to Ramayana and Ram Lila, he was supposed to act as an ordinary human being. So we see from the very beginning till the end, Lord Ramachandra is, in his activities, is limiting to that of a human being or a superhuman being. But he doesn't exhibit his power as of the Supreme Lord. Whereas we see when Krishna comes particularly to establish the principle of Dharma, and He is not bound by any limitations. Whereas Lord Ramachandra, we see that in His activities, He was very mindful that everything that He did was very much within the morality of human beings, you know, the human code of conduct. He didn't surpass the moral code. On the other hand, we see Lord Krishna, He surpasses all moral codes. We see Krishna's pastimes in the 10th canto, where in the middle of the night on a full moon, He's going to the forest and enjoying with women of Vrindavan. Now, this is not an accepted fact in this material world. Even though the material world is, you know, full of immorality, still we don't see people abusing their moral conducts. You know, there's certain rules of the society one has to be following. And in the present society, if someone is running around like that with many women, it's considered immoral. But when Krishna is performing His Rasa Lila with the gopis, we are considering that very, very exalted, and we are worshipping that form of the Lord. And another principle is of Krishna stealing. Now, stealing is, of course, totally criminal. Nothing is accepted. Whether you steal 1 pound or you steal 1 million, it's still stealing. And it is not accepted fact in the world that, you know, it is not a thing which is condoned in this material world. It is condemned, any act of stealing. But here Krishna is stealing, and we are worshipping Him as Makhan Chor, and, you know, giving that great attribute that he is the great stealer of everything. So like that we see that Lord Shiva's position is very unique, and Chitraketu understood his position. So he addressed him in that way, that he is such an exalted personality. But still, to an ordinary human being who would see that person sitting like that with a woman on his lap and embracing, would be considered immoral. Although today we don't see that so much as immoral, because, you know, if you go downtown, you see all sorts of crazy people doing all sorts of crazy things. And it is not unusual, you know, especially on a Friday night or Saturday night, you see all sorts of crazy people doing all sorts of crazy things, violating every single human code of conduct. And it's accepted that, you know, this is life. You know, we are living in the 21st century. But according to the religious principles, it is immoral. So when Chitraketu saw that, he was thinking, how is it possible that he's doing this? You know. And further verses explain that whatever great man does, common men follow. So Chitraketu was more concerned on the basis that if Lord Shiva is doing these things, then ordinary people will follow him. So he was concerned that Lord Shiva, being, as is described here, that he's a spiritual master of all the populace, all the living entities who have got material bodies. So this is actually the original spiritual master. And if he behaves like this, then common men will say this is okay. So Chitraketu was thinking on that, those lines. Now here, Chitraketu himself is surrounded by women's of Vidyaras and all these demigod goddesses and Apsaras and all these people flying on his aeroplane with him. So he is saying that when Lord Shiva is presenting himself like this, it is not a very good thing for the masses to be exemplified. Now we see today also in India, many people, they justify their nonsense by saying that this is done by Lord Shiva and we are followers of Lord Shiva. So they very commonly drink what we call is bhang. Bhang is like a drink made out of marijuana leaves and make it into paste and then rub it in, some copper in there and mix it with milk, and it becomes very potent, powerful, intoxicant. And people drink that and saying, this is Lord Shiva drank this. So, it is okay for us to drink because it is Mahaprasad of Lord Shiva and we are Lord Shiva's devotees. So they justify this. And they do many things which is immoral in society, but they justify by saying that Lord Shiva did it. So one example is given that Lord Shiva, out of his great compassion to the material living entities and to save them from the poison which came out of the churning of Mount Sumeru, when the demigods and the demons were churning the great ocean, all the poison which came out, Lord Shiva, out of his compassion, he took all that poison and put it in his neck and he held it there so that the living entity cannot be affected by the poison. So those people who think that it is okay to drink intoxicants made out of marijuana and all these other intoxicating leaves is okay, and they say, okay, drink poison because Lord Shiva did that. That's also Mahaprasad. But that they would not do because obviously they take poison, it will kill them. So in this relation, there is one very nice story. When Lord Buddha, during his time, he was teaching his followers austerities and penances and a very strict code of conduct. So every day, they would go to three places and ask for alms. And whatever they get, they would bring it back to the ashram, and that is their whatever it is. Sometimes it is just material things like clothes and things like that. Other times it's food stuff. So whatever they get, that is their quota for the day, and that's it. They would not go for any more. So one day, when Lord Buddha was following, and he happened to go past two different places where they gave him a lot of grains. So his disciples pulled out the baskets and took all the grains and everything they gave. And the third shop, which was selling liquor. So when Lord Buddha asked, Bhikshan Dehin, give some alms. And the shopkeeper said, this is not befitting you, this is liquor. Although the guy is selling liquor, but he has some moral understanding that, this is a saintly person, how I can give him liquor. And Lord Buddha said, whatever it is, Bhikshan Dehin, and he puts his communal pot out. And after three times he repeats, the guy said, okay, since you're asking for it, I'll give it to you. So he pours liquor in his little clay pot, and Lord Buddha drinks it. So the disciples who are following him are thinking, wow, it's our opportunity now. So he goes along, and everybody starts filling up their pots and getting drunk. Now Lord Shiva, Lord Buddha, after he finished his thing, he went back to the ashram because that was a third house or a shop. And he finished, expecting his followers to follow him. But they were so much engrossed in intoxication that they became lost in their minds, and they were just lying all over the place, completely intoxicated. And after some time, when the effect of intoxication was worn away, they all staggered into the ashram, and Lord Buddha was thinking, useless, totally useless followers. So next day, he purposely took a route where he knew that the first two places will not give him anything. And the third place where he went was a place where there was like a workshop where they were melting lead. So the guy was melting lead, and he said, Bhikshan Dehin. So he said, what can I give you? This is lead, it's nothing of any use to you. And Buddha says, it's okay, whatever you want to give, please give. So he puts, you know, this boiling lead into his pot. And Lord Buddha sort of drinks it all. And he says, all of you line up, and how you can drink, you know, lead is as it is, is poisonous stuff. But liquid, you know, when it's boiling hot, and it's like a liquid form, when you put it down your throat, it's not going to be very, very palatable. It's going to burn you down. And all these followers were saying, no. He will kill us. I say, hey, you had no problem yesterday. You did exactly what I did. So what's the problem now? And of course, they refused to take. So then he said, you see, learn a lesson from here. Do not imitate what I am doing. Follow my instructions, which will elevate to you to the highest position. So like that, you know, in India, of course, people justify following Lord Shiva, because, of course, as in many scriptures, Lord Shiva's glorifications are given and his exalted position. And people abuse this being followers of Lord Shiva and take all kinds of intoxicants. And even now, you see, when you go on a pilgrimage to Vrindavan, you find all these babas sitting there, you know, and they had their little clay smoking pipes filled with hashish, and they're smoking away, you know, and they say, well, this is, you know, Lord Shiva's great mercy upon us. But that is not Lord Shiva's mercy. They are just trying to abuse Lord Shiva's greatness, because Lord Shiva is never seen intoxicated. You'll never find anywhere in the scriptures where he's intoxicated. Because he, you know, his personality is such great that he is not affected by these things. Just like Lord Buddha, when he drank the alcohol, you know, he wasn't affected because he's a pure devotee, you know, and he didn't get any effect like a mundane person. So Lord Shiva, of course, being a very special, unique personality, we have to understand that we should not imitate. It was here, Chitraketu had two things. One, he was concerned that if Lord Shiva behaves like this, then people will think this is normal to behave like this. So he was seeing that, and he was like criticizing Lord Shiva for that. But Parvati, sitting there, she was thinking in a different way. Now again, in these verses is mentioned that a pure devotee, when he is criticized or is blasphemed or is glorified, he takes it with a pinch of salt and, you know, and with equal understanding. He doesn't get affected by it. But if you're not properly situated, then you will get disturbed by it. So one example I can give is of Srila Prabhupada. You know, when before he came to U.S. to establish the Krishna Conscious Sankirtan movement, he was preaching in Delhi. And in those early days, Prabhupada would print, you know, a folding page of like A4 size Back to Godhead magazine, like a newspaper. And then he would go every day to distribute this to the people in the streets. So one day when he was distributing this, he came across one open tea bar where one of these army officer was sitting there with his big mustache and, you know, just sitting there with his cup of tea and newspaper. And he was smoking his pipe. So Prabhupada approached him and saying, he's a gentleman. He's saying, sir, you're reading this newspaper. Can I interest you in this transcendental newspaper, where we are giving out the message of the Supreme Lord? And this man was sitting there and he looked at Prabhupada. And of course, he's a cultured man, but he's not a devotee. He's a materialist person. So he was there smoking away his pipe, drinking tea, reading newspaper. Now, if you see what Prabhupada says, that all these activities are mundane and low class. Reading newspapers is useless waste of time. Unless you have to read newspaper for, you know, your preaching purpose, that, you know, you're involved in doing PR work or something like that, and interacting with the masses outside, then you have to know what's happening. Otherwise, you know, you look like a complete bozo when you go and approach this person, you know, and you don't know what's happening in the material world. You can't be living in a cocoon unless you're living in the four walls of Bhaktivinoda Manor and don't go beyond these four walls, then it's fine. But when you have to go outside, then, you know, you have to have, you know, certain understanding of what's happening in the world. Otherwise, you cannot preach. Yeah? But it is not that, you know, we would order our local news agent and say, hey, bring a pile of newspaper, and every morning at breakfast time, you know, we sort of go through the papers like normally, you know, in the outside world. People, you know, sit down for their breakfast, sip their cup of tea or coffee, and browse through the newspaper before they go off to work. So it's a mundane activity. Then he's drinking tea, which of course also is a mild form of intoxication, which is also a forbidden act. And he's smoking his pipe, which is also intoxicant. Smoking, you know, tobacco is also not very conducive for someone who wants to practice spiritual life. So he's doing all these things which are mundane and un-Krishna conscious. So he asks Prabhupada, Swamiji, please sit down. So Prabhupada, of course, sat down there. And then he offered Prabhupada tea, and Prabhupada said, no, we don't take this. But can I interest you in this newspaper of ours called Back to Godhead magazine? And this person says, Swamiji, all I can tell you is, why are you wasting giving out this piece of paper to everyone? You print some books. People may have value for books. But this paper, you know, is of no good. Now, those of you who have been to India, I've seen that when you go on street side stalls where they're selling all kind of foodstuffs, they wrap it in newspaper and give it to you, you know. So this army officer was saying that this is what this paper is good for. Once you have finished reading the news item, it is only good for disposable paper plates. You know? So Prabhupada was thinking, just see, this man, he's reminded me of the instruction I received in Radhakund from my spiritual master. Because that time when Prabhupada is walking in Radhakund with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada, he said that if you ever get money, print books. So this man was instructing Prabhupada of printing books. And Prabhupada said, my spiritual master is speaking through this man to remind me of my instructions to print books. So Prabhupada saw it differently. Now if someone comes up to us and instructs us on this matter, what would we do? If you are not very Krishna conscious, we would say, such audacity you have. You are smoking, you are drinking tea, you are reading newspaper, and you have audacity to instruct me what to do in spiritual matters? Never mind that someone who is doing these things, even if a fellow devotee comes and instructs you something and corrects you, we are immediately defensive. We do not take it that this person is trying to help me in my spiritual life. You know. And if that person happens to be your junior, then obviously you would have even more anger in you, saying, how dare you instruct a senior devotee? You see? But here, in this particular verse, it is mentioned that when Lord Shiva heard Chitraketu speak like this, he just smiled. He did not take it as an offense. He took it that this person has some authentic concern for me, for what I'm doing here. But the way he went around doing that was wrong. He could have approached in a different way. You know. But he was trying to sort of, you know, like smirk in his smile and then sitting in his exalted plane and saying, hey, you know, you are such a great person and you're doing mundane activity like this, you know. So it was not an appropriate way of approaching. And nonetheless, what he meant was good. So Lord Shiva saw that and he appreciated that. But of course, Parvati did not appreciate it. So she cursed him. But later on, then when he is asking for forgiveness to Mother Parvati, Parvati understands, but the curse is already done. But he takes it, and then Chitraketu also, he takes it in the spirit that whatever comes my way is due to my misdeeds. He was not thinking that, you know, why she cursed me. Because of course he is also a devotee of the Lord. And not only that, his great fortune was that he saw the Supreme Lord face to face and got his blessings. So when all these things happened, he was quite happy to take it in that stride. Now if someone comes and tells us something, immediately we would be very defensive, or we would be upset and sulking in some corner somewhere saying, oh, this Prabhu told me this. You know, because we haven't actually developed that understanding. So we have to have a clear understanding of when we receive instructions, we have to take it in a proper spirit. That any instruction given, it is usually for our own benefit and for our advancement in Krishna consciousness. Now the other point here, which is mentioned, is the situation where Chitraketu, after meeting Lord Sankarshan and being blessed by him, he becomes elevated. And that is why he was traveling in this transcendental aeroplane and going through the vastness of the universe. Now, he was getting a little arrogant and puffed up of his exalted position. So this is another thing which we have to learn. There's another thing we have to learn from this particular chapter is that no matter what kind of position is bestowed upon us by the mercy of the Lord, we have to accept that in the spirit of service. That sometimes an individual has been promoted to take care of a number of devotees under his care. So he doesn't, it doesn't mean that now he has become a little Ishwara, little God, that he is the controller now of these people. He has to think in terms that somehow, by the Lord's mercy, he has given me responsibility of this number of people under my care, whom I have to make sure that they remain focused in the Krishna conscious program, and not make such a way, deal with such in such a way that you upset them, or you deal with them in such a way that they will leave Krishna consciousness. So here, it's a very nice example in this particular section here, is that Chitraketu was very much puffed up now because he had blessings of the Lord, and he thought that, he is very special. Of course, those who receive this causeless mercy of the Lord are greatly fortunate people. They are greatly blessed. But the more you realize that you are getting the blessing of the Lord, and more the Lord is engaging you in the service, then you have to understand that your position is of a servant. And that is why Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that the position of living entity is Jivere Swarupoye Nitya Krishna Das. But beyond that, he's saying, Dasu, Dasu, Nu Das. Why servant of the servant of the servant? Because when we take that position, although being a servant of the servant of the servant is an exalted position, but we have been put in a position to take a humble position where we serve the Lord in that spirit. Because at the end of the day, we are very insignificant. We're insignificant. We have no significance at all. Our only significance comes is that when we are attached to the Supreme Lord. Just like, when you're burning fire, and when you see the fire is burning, and then you find little sparks coming out of the fire, and as long as that spark is in close proximity of the fire, it is glowing. The further it goes away from the fire, then the glow is gone, because there's no more power coming from the fire. So we are like that. A living entity, it has no power at all. There's no glow, as long as you are away from the Supreme Lord. But as closer you come to the Supreme Lord, and the closer and closer you come, the spark becomes brighter and brighter. And same thing with the spark. As long as it stays near the fire, it will always be glowing, because it's receiving the power from the fire. So a living entity becomes in his natural position when he is associated with the Supreme Lord. So this is our position, that through the process of Krishna consciousness, we come closer and closer to the Supreme Lord. And the more closer and closer you come to the Supreme Lord, the more and more the effulgence of the spirit soul will manifest. That's why you see, when you see some great exalted personal like Srila Prabhupada, you know, there's so much effulgence in him. You know, and everybody who came in contact with him were affected by his effulgence. So same with us, that as we become more and more pure in our practices, we come closer to Krishna, then it will manifest that. It's not that close proximity means that you, as you know, closer to the deities you go, the more close proximity you have. Although, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, he will allow you to do some personal service to him. But that doesn't mean that we should take it that, oh, now I am so close to Krishna, so I'm you know, beyond the domain of material illusionary energy. You know, because there is an English saying, so near and yet so far. So you may be very close to the deities, serving them personally, bathing them, dressing them, but your consciousness is so screwed up that you are far away from the Supreme Lord. And again we see great exalted personalities like Haridas Thakur. You know, due to his position as born in the Mohammedan family, he was not allowed to go into the temple of Lord Jagannath. But he was so close to Lord Jagannath that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally, who is the expansion of Lord Jagannath, would bring Mahaprasad to Haridas Thakur because of his great proximity to the Supreme Lord. Whereas there's others who are also devotees of the Lord, but Lord Chaitanya did not bring them personally, the transcendental Mahaprasad of Lord Jagannath. So you see on these activities that the closeness to the Supreme Lord, it is through the devotion and through your purification, not physical proximity. Because this material body can get close to the Lord, but it won't have any effect. It is the person inside which is more important. So through the process of devotional service, this body becomes purified. And it is then fit for the service of the Lord. So we have to see how we can progress in our spiritual life without becoming, you know, arrogant and puffed up that now we are devotees. Because we are not really devotees. If we were really devotees, then we would understand what is our real position. So that's why, you know, Prabhupada even said one time when he asked the devotees, they said, well, now Prabhupada, we are devotees. And Prabhupada said, no, you're not devotees, you're trying to be devotees. Because if you are really devotees, then we have to understand what is the characteristic of a devotee. And all we have to do is just read about the previous great stalwart acharyas and how they conducted their lives and how they were conscious of Krishna all the time. And if we have even a fraction of that quality in us, then we are coming close to becoming a devotee. But we are nowhere near Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We are nowhere near Srila Prabhupada. You know, these are examples we have of great pure devotees. So our position is nowhere near. And you know, we feel so much arrogance that now I'm a devotee, I'm initiated, I'm allowed to preach now, I'm allowed to do yagyas, I'm allowed to do the offering on the altar, and I'm doing so many things. This is simply the causeless mercy of the Lord. It's not that we are pure. Purity only comes when you have your real understanding of who you really are. And you act on that platform. Well, it's easy to preach that we are spirit souls, we are not this body, the body is temporary. But when he actually comes to acting upon that, we act as if we are this body. We do everything for the body. So where is the question of saying, I am spirit soul? That is just knowledge, but it's not realized knowledge. Because when you actually act on the spirit soul level, then it is beyond. Then you're not, you know, limited by the body. So we have to learn from these particular chapters of how we should conduct our lives. And it's not just a story of Chitraketu, but this story in itself is a lesson for us to learn a number of things, how we should deal with our Krishna conscious practice. And here we see there's a number of points. One is we should not offend anybody. Second, we should not become puffed up. And the demigods have very, very unique and special positions. although we don't recommend that we should be worshipping them as our worshipful deity, but we should always offer respect. You know, sometimes we see that when devotees go to India, and there's many different temples of Goddess Durga, Lord Shiva, Hanuman, Lord Ganesh, and devotees just like, no big deal, you know. But that's a big offense. You know, we should be very mindful that we pay respect to all. Because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught us Trinada Pi Sunichena, Taroro Pi Sunichena, Amani Na Mani Dena, Kirtane Sudahari. Now the first three instructions are to become humble, tolerant, and free from false ego. But after this, he's saying we should be ready to offer all respect unto others. Now he's not saying here respect to advanced devotees or this category or that category. He's saying we should be ready to offer respect unto all others. So that respect has to be given to everyone. So when we are practicing Krishna consciousness, we have to learn how to pay respect to everyone and show respect to everyone. But generally we find that we become very much complacent in our practice of showing respect. So, you know, it is, and all this is established for our own personal purification. It is not for some external things which we have to do. You know, when we come into the temple room, we pay obeisance to the Lord, we pay obeisance to Prabhupada. But sometimes we are lazy, so we just, quick bow and, fold your hands and walk out of the temple room. The Lord says, it's fine, no big deal with me. You are the person who's losing out. It doesn't take long to just bow down and get down on the floor. But we see that this practice is happening. You know, when we meet devotees, instead of, offering our obeisances, say, hey, Prabhu, accept my vanchakalpas, Fine, it's okay, no problem, no big deal. But if you actually bow down, then it will show some humility in your heart and show respect for the other person. And it will be personal purification, But if you are complacent in this practice, then what happens? Very soon we find that we compromise in so many practices. And before we know it, it just becomes kind of ritual without any meaning. And if it's just a ritual, then it is not going to have the same potency of purification. Because everything we do in Krishna consciousness is there to make us advance in our practice of Krishna consciousness. Nothing is there for some ritualistic or some ceremonial thing. Although externally it may appear like that, but everything has a very deep, profound influence on how we do things. And in that devotional spirit, if we do things properly, then slowly and gradually purification will take place, and then the knowledge will be revealed to you from within. It is nothing external. You may read Bhagavatam, but if you cannot digest that and it's no purification inside, then the revelation won't be there. Knowledge will be there on an intellectual level, but not on a devotional level. So everything we do has to be done in a devotional spirit, not on an intellectual platform. And in that way, our advancement will come, and we'll actually feel ecstasy of engaging in Krishna consciousness. And we'll be feeling so much happiness and blissfulness that we are so eager to conduct Krishna conscious activities that we do not feel that there is anything other than that. Otherwise, we'll be looking for other things. And in the material world is such that it is so easy to grasp material sense enjoyment because it's so easily available. And then we become so much conditioned in that way, we think that this is spiritual life. And all through our lives, we go thinking this is spiritual life, and before we know it, we've been fooled by the illusionary energy. And we don't see the real thing. And the real test is that come what may, we'll never forget Krishna. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, if you embrace me or you neglect me, it's still the same. It's no difference. Because devotee doesn't look at it that way. Devotee says, whatever comes my way, it is mercy of the Lord. And it's pure kripa. So we have to develop in that spirit. And if you follow that and learn from these examples, then our lives becomes perfect. So on that note, I'll stop here. If anybody has any comment, questions...